Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growling. Paul Diener Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here with you. It is May 18th. We're officially into the dead zone of the NFL. There's stuff. There's a sprinkling of news and things that we'll parse through. Jay's got homework assignments. Good on you, Jay, for doing your homework.
I went above and beyond. You said go back the last 10 years. I went back to 2005. So extra credit.
People that were here last week remember Jay giving himself homework, basically. The results of said homework will be spilled here. What were the two things?
It was the record, not the record, but in that time period, since 05, the most draft picks that have made the opening 53-man roster.
That's a good one.
And then the other one was last week on the podcast, we talked about the Bengals record after the bye. And you said you were curious what the record was before the bye, because it's like, hey, let's go all out here. Then we get a week off. So you thought their record would be better before the bye than after. And it was, but it's still not great.
All right. Well, I assume they were going to be sad stats. They always are. So
that's right.
We'll hold off for that. Good tease. But let's just kind of run through some of the news. There's nothing really huge going on as far as what's happening. Rookie mini camp was this past weekend, and by rookie mini camp, we mean dudes came around and kind of ran a little bit for like a day and a half. It's very, very light. There's really not much that goes on that you can glean necessarily other than a basic athletic profile of some of these guys as they show up in house. We got to talk to a bunch of them. We talked to Zach Taylor on Friday. So there's some stuff that came of that that we can parse through a few takeaways there. But there's a lot of how'd they look? Like, I mean, you know, there's dudes out here in shorts. Trent Taylor was wearing a backwards ball cap. Like, nobody knows really what they're doing. It's very loose to try to anybody that's out here claiming anything because they watched a rookie minicamp practice is lying to you. And that's fine if they are, but we're not going to do that. it's all pretty basic stuff happening at this point. They'll be here this week too. So this week is kind of it's the end of phase two, if you will, but it's all kind of a clustered mess of every team figuring out what they're going to do right now. So rookies are kind of in this week. Next week is when we have the OTA of veterans will also be reporting. Let's start there. It's kind of an interesting controversy that's going on around, and we've talked a little bit about it, of the pressure on these rookies, like the PA is telling people not to show up, and there's been lots of talk of the PA trying to get rid of the offseason program, and then you had the Juwan James incident, who he was released, and the Broncos aren't going to be paying him, so it looks like 10 mil is going to be gone, and then there will be lawyers and grievances, and who that's against, we'll see. But you have this situation where every team has kind of had to figure out how they're going to handle this. Are they going to report? Are they not going to report? Are some going to report? Are they going to make a statement that says we're not reporting? Are they going to make an under-the-table deal with their coaching staff of what they're willing to do? Every team is doing it differently. We've seen some come out this week. Jay, it's been interesting, man, and the end result of what is happens what I described. Zach Taylor had conversations with the veteran players, and the veterans said the big message was, we feel like we have work to do. We want to show up. And so they're going to next week. How many? We don't know, but we'll find out.
Yeah, and that is a good sign for the coaching staff and for fans. Football is the ultimate we before me sport, and it seems like that's kind of the approach. These guys know that what other teams are doing, but it feels like they, like you said, they know they have work to do. They missed last offseason doing work on the field. They know this is kind of a make or break year for Zach Taylor and the coaching staff. So I wouldn't be surprised to see full attendance once the veterans are here. And it's still voluntary. It's always been voluntary, but voluntary in quotes where, you know, I think anybody that's played high school sports knows there's off season voluntary stuff, weight room stuff. And, it's, if you don't show up there are repercussions, whether they are stated as that is the reason or not. So it is a good sign that the Bengals have not put out a statement saying they won't show up. I guess we'll have to wait and see how many actually do. But if you're a Bengals fan, you have to be encouraged by that, because any step they can get ahead of other teams, even at this point of the season, is going to be helpful.
And a lot of teams are showing up, and we're seeing, so like the Colts are one, what you can look at and say, okay, they came to a negotiation basically between the players and Frank Reich and the coaching staff and said, look, all right, we'll wipe out the mandatory minicamp in mid-June. Let's just do 2 weeks of OTAs and call it a day. All right, come in, give us 2 weeks, and then you can be gone until training camp starts. And you're seeing teams kind of doing that. And I think that's kind of where the Bengals ended up here was, look, here's what we'll do. We don't know what exactly that's going to play out. We'll find out more about that as we get closer to next week, what exactly that is. But you'll see some sort of deal there. The other part of this is, you know, this is Joe Burrow's leading a lot of this because he does, and his voice matters and what he wants. And, you know, the question that was asked and that was brought up was, they are talking every day about ways that they can involve Joe Burrow in OTAs. Now, they're not going to have him out there running zone read options and live. Okay. Like, this is not, okay, let's put him in harm's way. As somebody say, oh, don't rush him back. What are they doing? This is literally like what you've already seen him doing, throwing at Jordan Palmer's place in California, right? Except with Bengals receivers. You know, you can run plays that are no linemen, where it's, you know, it's your whatever sevens, fives, whatever you want to run out there, and just run the receivers out in the route, the running back out in the route, no rush. And let Burrow make the calls, drop back, throw to whoever he wants to throw to, and start to develop that on the field. And how much of that they'll do, that's really what they're discussing with the doctors and with Joe and with everybody else, to make sure everyone's comfortable with whatever they want to do. But it does sound like they do plan to involve him in some way.
You almost have to. But the good thing here is the appreciation for Brandon Allen goes up, because after watching rookie camp on Friday, Eric Dungy and Kyle Shermer weren't exactly putting every ball on the hands or on the numbers. No. And I mean, that's a big deal. If you're trying to get work in, and it's also, you worry about if balls are a little bit off target, these guys are competitive. And we heard Marvin Lewis scream it all the time, stay off the ground, stay off the ground. But if balls are inaccurate and guys are out there lunging for them, that's where injuries can, and I mean, we saw Andrew Hawkins get hurt diving for a ball in training camp 1 year. It's just, it's good to have him as an insurance policy, Brandon Allen, but it really comes in handy this offseason, because they are going to do everything they can to keep Joe involved, but he's not going to be out there running team drills and like you said, running the zone read or anything crazy.
I don't know how much team drills they're even going to do. I mean, you're going to do some stuff. Let's not forget, if we're going to talk about guys getting injured, let's not forget Jonah Williams got injured during OTAs and mandatory minicamp. I mean, that's when this stuff happened. These linemen, you know, I think that's a big part of this from the PA, is we don't need these linemen out here doing some physical grind, even if they're not wearing pads or whatever, because you still can get stuff like what happened to Jonah. And I think that's where people get concerned about, well, if there was no offseason program, would something still have happened to Jonah Williams in camp? Maybe. Would more people have gotten hurt? I don't know. Maybe. But that you can point to these things where you talk about helping a rookie's development. Did that help a rookie's development? Jonah Williams getting hurt and losing his rookie year? No. And so that's what the PA will point to with some of this stuff. And it's about, I think it's about lightening the work and trying to take a lot of this injury risk out and just keep it as basic as possible. And that's where involving Burrow comes in. The more basic, the better for him. The more he's already doing that stuff, throwing the ball and dropping back, and we've seen those videos. So I think it's great. However you can do it, feel everybody feels comfortable. There, I don't see any harm in it.
No, I mean, yeah, there is no downside, and you there are teams that are negotiating, like you said, lighter loads. But you look at last year, did it really, no offseason, no preseason? Maybe T. Higgins and Joe Burrow started a little slower than they would have without him, but they still had really good rookie years. So it maybe these OTAs aren't as important as coaches have made them out to be all these years. You can do this stuff virtually, or you can do lighter loads. And I think it's never going to go back the way it was. It feels like the players are getting a little more power, a little more say in this, even though everything's already been collectively bargained. Last year, the pandemic forced them to make some changes. And I think you're just going to see the ripple effect from those changes as we go forward year after year.
Yeah, and what was the conversation surrounding the Colts one that's kind of been public, and what the Bengals have done is, look, their teams and coaches are just going to get as much as they can get. They understand there's just no way to get everybody the way they want to under the whole voluntary program. So they're going to find whatever way they can do to get whatever they can from the leadership group of every team. And set some sort of standard there. And if you have the same leadership year in and year out, you can find consistency in that, and everybody knows what to expect. Right now, everybody's kind of figuring it out. It's a wild, wild west. Everybody's figuring out what that is for them. But good news for the Bengals that they will be there. We'll have more on that next week, when the vets officially come in. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor. Rookie Minicamp. As far as news to come out of that, I mean, there was a bunch of signings. Trent Taylor shows up. He is going to be in the Alex Erickson role that we've been talking about, that they kicked the tires on a bunch of different players. Dede Westbrook came up in that conversation at one point publicly, but they were looking at a bunch of guys with return ability and backup slot ability. So Trent Taylor, who is kind of he's a guy, fifth year. Jay, you have some Trent Taylor stats. Do Jay's got stats on Trent Taylor?
I do. You've mentioned this on past podcasts. What is the deal with Darius Phillips? Why won't they give this guy a shot?
And they hate him. They have to. No one's told me that. It just feels that way.
So I went back and looked how many punt returns of 20 yards or more the Bengals had last year, and it was 3. And that was in the upper third of the league. And I went and looked at Trent Taylor, how many punt returns of 20 yards or more he's had in his career. And it's 3. So
how losing many Alex,
well, that's just it. 42. So not a ton.
How many did the Bengals have last year?
I don't have that number.
Oh, Jay, make me give you more homework. Well, I'm curious. I mean, what the percentage of 20 yard return is.
Yeah. I should have.
That's got to be about right. I mean, it's probably a little lower. I mean, they probably were in the 20 or 30s on actual returns.
Yeah, because that defense didn't stop a lot of people and force a lot of punts.
It sure didn't.
And it didn't turn the ball over a whole lot either. So, yeah, there probably weren't a ton of punt return opportunities. But it is, I mean, losing Erickson, I know a lot of people bang on him, but he was a consistent presence back there for 6 seasons. Darius Phillips seems like he has more explosive ability. And you just wonder if you remember early in his career, he had trouble catching punts and not just in practice, but, in a couple games, he had issues. I think one was even a kickoff, and there was a lack of trust there early on, but it seemed like they had gotten over that. But yeah, there's something with Darius Phillips where he's not getting his chance at cornerback. Now they're out there looking for someone to compete with him or someone to hand the job to, the punt return job. And Trent Taylor is that guy. He was a solid returner, but his usage there kind of dwindled over the years. He had a really good rookie year, and then his numbers have gone down since then. But it's not just the punt return. You need a backup slot receiver. I mean, if anything were to happen to Tyler Boyd, they're looking at Trent Irwin being that guy. And at least with Trent Taylor, you've got a guy that has played a number of games and been semi-successful in the slot for a decent offense, too. I mean, the 49ers didn't have a great team last year, but they went to the Super Bowl 2 years before that. So I think he's a guy that, you know, not only an undrafted free agent we talk about making the team, but a guy that was here on a tryout basis. And I could see him making the 53 because of what he can bring in the slot and punt return.
I mean, they needed the other thing with Darius Phillips, and I know people get sick of me talking, but I mean, his health is his issue. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you don't know if you're going to have him, you can't go with not having another productive returner or not having another quality corner. And so that's part of it, is when you feel like you can't count, you have to always have that steady competition right there, ready to step in, because he's been so injury prone and he's smaller. And that's just kind of, that's part of his DNA as a player right now. Like, when he's played, he's gotten hurt and he's smaller, and that's what happens to smaller guys. And so I get it. I mean, I get that aspect. I think this is they needed this player. They needed this role filled, and Trent Taylor is just as good a guy as anybody to do it. 23 returns by the Bengals this past year, by the way. 23, okay. all by Alex Erickson. So, other news to come out of this would be, looks like Jackson Carmen's going to play right guard. I guess nobody knew for sure. I mean, also, great assault on this. Literally, Doug Rosfeld was playing left tackle at one point. Okay, like, they had coaches on the line because they didn't have enough linemen to fill out the whole squad when you just had a limited number of players at a very small rookie camp. But I do. It does appear all expectations are, you know, Jackson Carmen. They want him to be right guard. That's the spot. Left guard, you'll have the competition. I think you'll have competition at right guard too, but I think left guard is the one, I think, where you'll see the competition amongst the remaining pieces. Xavier Suofilo, Quentin Spain, maybe Michael Jordan, and see how that works out over there. Any surprise on that? I guess that's kind of how we assumed it would go, but to kind of see it and then talk about it with a little bit of certainty was something.
A little surprised, because I don't know how much of a adjustment period there is, but he's been a tackle his entire career, but he's been a left tackle. So now he's on the right side and everything's kind of flipped. But it is a little different going tackle to guard. And then you wonder too about, you know, it's the left tackle's the blind side. I don't know if that's as big of a deal for guards, but if you have a rookie learning a new position, it would make sense that putting him on the right side would be more advantageous than on the left side. And again, it's not a true blind side when they're coming up the middle, but I always kind of thought it would be right guard, because I feel like Quentin Spain's going to be the left guard, and he was that's where he was more comfortable last year.
That's his natural position that he's played the most.
And Suofilo has been a right guard. So it just felt like that Spain would be the left guard and Carmen would be the right. And that's the way it looks after one rookie camp practice that we got.
Yeah, again, literally coaches playing, firing off their feet and working on their technique out there on play. So let's you know, we'll calm down with that, but we'll have plenty of time to track how that all falls out. Maybe the most notable thing to come out of this was Ja'Marr Chase, and his big scooter ride, which you wrote about. The people can go and read Jay's camp observations, but you wrote a little bit about this. Ja'Marr Chase, very excited to see that Cincinnati has buildings.
And trains.
Buildings and trains and stuff. So, I mean, look, here's the thing. Ja'Marr Chase is 21. Whatever, he's 20 or 20s. Never really left Louisiana, you know. He went to LSU from down there. Not exactly been all around. Certainly doesn't really know anything about the Midwest. What did you know about other parts of the country necessarily when you were 21? I mean, how much traveling did you do? Right? I mean, who places? I can't tell you how many people that I meet from somewhere else would be surprised. Like, oh, Ohio, what's that next to? Like, where is that? Is that, you know, I mean, there, he doesn't have any idea about Cincinnati. So the idea of coming here and thinking that it was, quote, land is not out of the ordinary necessarily. Like, yes, it's an actual place with, like, in, you know, a civilization with inhabitants who are cultured. I don't hold that against him. I found it more funny than anything. But you know, that's kind of a thing. It does kind of open your eyes. If somebody was like, got drafted and was like, oh, Cincinnati, which it's, you know, when you said, well, the exact quote was, it's actually pretty nice, or whatever it was.
Yes.
I mean, that made a sense of, I thought it was going to suck. I didn't want to come here. I thought this was going to suck, right? And yeah. Now that I get here, I realize it's, you know, a real place with buildings and trains.
And hills.
And hills.
I mean, that's part of the fun of traveling. I was in my 40s the first time I went to Alabama, and I was just struck by the landscape. I'd never seen cotton fields before. It's just, even if you travel, like when they go to road games, he's been out of Louisiana, but they just jump on a plane and they're pretty much in the hotel and they ride a bus to the stadium. You don't actually get to see these places. So it was amusing, and you don't hold it against a guy. Like you said, when I was 21, I was not a geography major and I was not a world traveler. I'd been to a few places, but I could see where the layout of certain cities that you've never been to could surprise you.
You know, we had heard rumblings in the pre-draft process about Jamar not being super excited about the concept of Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And that's because of stuff like this. Like, where do you want to live? If you're a 21-year-old kid, where do you want to live? Like, who's interested in you? Cincinnati and Miami. Like, you know, where do you want to go? Of course. And you don't know anything about that place. You think it's land. Like, maybe that is real. But it's like most times a story, Chris Collinsworth has told this story a lot about how, and I'm going to butcher it, but it was some semblance of, he got passed over the first time the Bengals could have taken him. And then everybody, like in the rooms, oh, you don't want to go there. That place sucks anyway. And this, that, and the other. And he didn't know anything about Cincinnati. He was from some Florida guy, didn't want to be up there. And then once he came here, I mean, he's still here selling Camargos. Right. You know, he's still down selling Cadillacs. So, I mean, you know, we're talking about a guy that didn't know anything about it, didn't think he wanted to come here, never heard anything about it. And then you adopt the city and you end up loving it. That happens to a lot of rookies places, a lot, and for all different reasons in different places. Think that they will hate it, don't want to be there, don't like the idea of going there. And then you get there and you settle in and you realize, hey, it's not so bad. I kind of like it.
Yeah. I mean, Anthony Munoz, yeah. There's a lot of former Bengals that have stuck around and made Cincinnati their home because that's where they played the majority of their career and they fell in love with it. And as most people that listen to this are probably Cincinnati residents, you know what the town, what the region brings. And it's just a little eye-opening for Jamar Chase. And I think he's, as soon as Joe Burrow takes him out to dinner somewhere, he'll like it even more.
Yeah, exactly. So beyond that, signings kind of coming in fast and furious. God, it's so nice to work in this era instead of 10, 15 years ago where you're just waiting on the holdouts. They ripped through the entire day three draft class already. Seven guys all signed, and then they signed Taylor as well. That all came on Monday. And so you've got most of these guys now. So you'll see the last three will come off the board here, I would assume, over the coming weeks. So then you'll get everybody under contract. That's nothing really new. I mean, there's teams that are announcing their entire draft class signing, like, immediately, and it's nice to have that. There's no haggling, like you said. The stuff is all slotted, right, Jay?
Exactly. And I had a question on Twitter about what these deals are, and you pretty much know what they are before they even sign them, just because everything is slotted. But of the seven they signed, the first one they draft was Cam Sample. He's 4 years. These are all 4 year contracts. He gets $4.3 million, and you go all the way down to Wyatt Hubert, the last guy they took in the seventh round. He's $3.6 million. And everybody else is in between. The signing bonuses go from $788,000 all the way down to $104,000. It's basically rubber stamped.
excuse me, there's just a little bit of language in each contract, but every year you see this, it almost seems like the Bengals tick them off in reverse order, where they go seventh, sixth, fifth, and work their way up to the second and first round guys. And this year, I don't want to give myself more homework, because this would be hard to look up, but that has to be a record, signing seven draft picks on one day.
Yeah. And I just think that's just kind of the way the league is going. And thankfully, because the haggling over rookies and contracts and stuff was one of the dumbest things this league ever had going on. I'm glad that they fixed that in the 11 CBA. All right. So let's, one thing that I have that I saw today that I liked, Jonah Williams has tats. Jonah Williams got like a sleeve down his left arm, and it just popped up on Instagram today. I was scrolling through and I was like, when did Jonah Williams get, did he always have tats? Did I forget that? And I went into his profile and checked out even just it looked like a few months ago, even a picture of him, nothing clean. He looks pretty good. And we can Photoshop even and make ourselves look pretty badass in our Instagrams, right? Like, we know real life versus Instagram life, but he's looking pretty yoked. He's looking pretty intense. He got his whole left arm tatted up. I'm team Jonah Williams now. Like, he's coming in with some nasty.
I would like to talk to him and see what the reasoning behind that, or the inspiration behind that. Cause you see it, I don't have any tattoos, but I know people that get them and they get that first one. And it's almost like an addiction, where you get one and you start thinking about your next one, and then you get two and you get three. And he just skipped that whole buildup and went entire sleeve right from the get go. I would love to know if he started small and just decided to finish off the whole arm, or if that was his idea at the beginning, was to do a whole arm, and why, who talked him into it. Sounds like a good OTA type of story, if we can ever get access to him.
I used to do a series of Tell Me About Your Tat, and I loved it, because people do have really personal stories behind these, and you can really get to know guys that way. And they're also really proud to talk about theirs. Mm-hmm. The one I remember was Wallace Gilbert, because I would have to take a picture of it. And typically it was just me taking a picture of it in the locker room or whatever with my iPhone. And Wallace Gilberry had a really good one, and he had a good story about it, but he wanted to like monitor all my photos. He made me like retake it like 15 times. I took it and he looked at it, he picked up my phone, delete, 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 delete. No, try this angle. Let's get this light. Like, it was great. But I mean, guys are great talking about those, because it's something that is personal to them, and you get to know about them a little bit. And so many players have them. It's fun. I'm like you, I don't have a tat either. I've never been a tat guy, but I do enjoy talking to other people about theirs. Maybe it's living vicariously through them or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm older, so when I was of that age, it was you were either military or in jail or in a bike gang if you had a tattoo. And now it's like everybody has them. If I was 21 now, I'm sure I would be tatted up. I was a follower. Yeah. I had an earring. I had multiple earrings and long hair, so I did what was cool in my day.
We know what you did in your day, Jay. We can save the mullet stories for another day. You have some homework assignments that you blew through that we can talk about.
I do. Since we're talking Jonah Williams and first round pick, one of the homework assignments was looking up what the most draft picks were to make an opening 53. And I went back to the 2005 draft. Last year was not the most, but it stands out as the only year in this time frame that every draft pick made the 53, because they only had seven last year. And that's the only time that every single draft pick made the opening 53-man roster. But the record is eight. And 2018, it was eight of 11 draft picks made it. In 2015, it was eight of nine. The only one that didn't was Cedric Ogbuehi, because he started the year on NFI.
So technically he
made the team.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's a number of those, the NFIs and IR guys that yep. kind of lowered the number, but 2012, same thing. Eight made it. It'd be nine if you count Sean Prater, cause he started on IR and he did end up making the team. And Dan Heron, Boom Heron from Ohio State, was the only cut, and he ended up on the practice squad and eventually getting on the 53. But yeah, the record is eight as far as back to 2005. I don't know if I'm going to go beyond this or not.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think that covers it. I mean, that's a good, I mean, eight feels, I feel like they tie the record this year. That feels
I'd be surprised if they beat it. You know, like we said
injury,
last year. Like
I mean, it's about injury, right? That's what it'll come down to probably.
Yeah, but if they stay healthy, I could see all 10 of these guys making the team this year.
How many did you have making the team in your roster projection after the draft?
All but Trey Hill.
All but Trey Hill. Okay.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
That was before I knew he could dunk.
Right. Until before Mike Potts sold us all on Trey Hill. That is a tough spot with the two centers. There's going to be a lot of interesting battles, and we have lots of time to talk about in depth on what those will be. All right, let's just take a quick break.
I was going to say, you want to get to my other homework?
Oh, that's right. You had two homework. You're doing all your homework assignments. This is really unlike you in high school, right?
Oh, by far. Yeah. I never did. I never went above and beyond, and I missed more assignments than I turned in.
Well, look at you. You've really matured.
It took a while, but I got there. you had questioned when I did the record 7-25. The week after buys, that's pretty terrible for the Bengals. 217 winning percentage. And you questioned what the record would be the week before the bye, because it would seem like they would be inspired to go out and play hard and then get your week off, get your reward. You're right in that regard. In terms of recently, they have been awesome. They're 6-1-1 in the last 8 years, the week before the bye.
Wow.
But before that, they were 7-17. So overall, they're 13-18-1. Of course, there had to be a tie in there. Every Bengal stat has to have a tie in there somewhere. The Washington game was a week before by the one in London in 2016. That was the tie. So yeah, of late, 6-1-1 the week before a bye. And if you look at this year, the opponent the week before the bye is the home game against the Cleveland Browns. So that would certainly be a good one to win a game that they had about the same time last year, middle of the season, had the Browns beat, and the defense let Baker Mayfield drive down and throw the game-winning touchdown in the final minute. So Browns week 9 by week 10.
Zach Taylor 1-1 before the bye. They lost to the Rams in London in 2019, and then last year had the win against the Titans. So, what are we gleaning from this? I don't know. You'd rather bet on them before the bye than after. We know that much.
That's for sure. Yes.
We know that much. I like that. I like the spot of that Browns home game there. That feels good. That feels like one that they could pull out. Speaking of what they could pull out, let's talk about the schedule a little bit. Because we did the schedule preview. And what you most wanted to see, and it's been a week. It almost feels like it's been a month, and we've already talked about it, but we technically haven't. So we'll touch on it briefly before getting to our growler winners. Jay, what was your primary takeaways from the schedule? If we can still go back there and remember what we thought.
what a tough ending it is as far as opponents, but what a cushy ending it is as far as travel. You had it in your story. They leave Ohio just three times, or they leave Cincinnati just three times in the final 10 weeks. And they only leave Ohio twice in that time span, but you're playing the Chiefs and the Ravens and the Browns and all these teams coming off playoff seasons. And you've got teams like the 49ers and the Broncos who did not make the playoffs, who you expect to be the Chargers, who you expect to be much better this year. The most unique thing I thought, and I kind of went back and looked at this, it's different now because you have five NFC games, but the one division they're playing, the NFC North, they knock all four of those out in the first 6 weeks. That's a really weird quirk to the story or to the schedule. And of course, it starts with two NFC teams right off the bat. Second time in 3 years they've done that, where they go Minnesota, Chicago, and 2019 they went Seattle, San Francisco. So it's not a bad thing for a team trying to gain its footing to have all those NFC games up front, because that's not going to, if it does come down to a tiebreaker situation, that's not going to affect you.
I really like this. I thought the schedule broke for them really nicely because look, when you're really talking about if a schedule's easy or hard, I mean, everybody's got their algorithms and whatever. Like, you know, I like to look at Vegas projections because that's a better way to look at it than looking at last year's dumb. Things change year to year to get you look at what the Vegas totals are. The vast majority of the lowest Vegas total opponents that the Bengals have for win over unders are all at the front. And that's what you want. You want the bad teams at front, the good teams at the back, because the good teams will not be the good teams by the end of the year, more than likely. And that's a very important aspect of any schedule when you're trying to see if you got an easy schedule, if it broke for you. And because you know who you're playing, it's just a matter of when, and you want to play the good teams when things have a chance to go wrong for them, when the paper gets ripped up, because they're all good on paper. And so that's the case here. I mean, honestly, if you were ranking these outside of the Broncos game on December 19th, I mean, almost all of their easiest opponents are right off the jump. You know, the Vikings, the Bears, the Steelers are even the easiest of the division opponents, Jags, Packers. The earlier you get them, the better. If they don't have Aaron Rodgers, the Packers are, you know, we know what that looks like. Who knows what that will end up? That could be easier. The Lions, I mean, are projected as the worst team in football. Ravens, then you get the Jets. I mean, all of those front loaded. That's a lot of pressure to make hay early. We've talked a lot about what all this could mean for a staff that's on the hot seat of needing to show results quickly. But you got a lot of new coaches and a lot of new quarterbacks in that mix of teams. So a chance for the Burrow in year two, Zach Taylor in year three, building the roster the way they want it, a chance to do some damage early. And I liked the break of it that way. I thought that was a big advantage. And you didn't get, the most dominant pass rush teams immediately. The Vikings were 28th last year. Now it's Zim, and Zim will find a way to get them right, I'm sure. But you do have a team that did struggle to rush the passer last year, and the Bears were middle of the pack last year, even with Khalil Mack. I mean, they were sort of okay. So you don't want to open with like Steelers, Ravens, who just destroyed you last year, and they don't have that, and that's helpful when you're looking for kind of a soft landing for Burrow, finding confidence in his knee and his line and all that stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that the green jersey game that Joe Burrow had in Baltimore, where he just got pulverized. And this might be here's something else I should look up. But week seven, that might be the latest they've ever waited to face the Ravens. They open with them so many times. It seems like they are always getting them early in a season. So to have a team like that, like you said, with a great pass rush, not till week seven, is advantageous. And the other thing you wrote about, just with the swag of Ja'Marr Chase and all the other guys, the supremely confident Joe Burrow and Joe Mixon and Tyler Boyd, and you have that schedule front loaded with what should be easier teams, you could very easily see this team getting off to a pretty good start and that confidence just swelling and something special building right off the bat.
Totally agree. More importantly, nice slot for the Vegas trip. Nice. Yes. Slot. I like the November. It's still warm enough there. You know, you're going to get a refreshing warmth going there, and you've got great gambling happening. You've got major college football Saturday in play there. You've got the NBA going. There's all kinds of good stuff going on in November. So great slot for the Vegas trip for all of you guys that have booked them. I hope you haven't looked at the ticket prices, because they are absurd. Every Vegas home game has absurd ticket prices. You might want to wait for those to maybe come down as it gets closer, because they are sky high right now. They did you see the list of the top ticket?
Yeah, they're all Vegas games
except Brady and going back to Foxborough. It was like that was one, and then everything else was all the Vegas home games. So keep that in mind if you're plotting your trip out there. Okay, so with the schedule, we did have Bengals growler bet last week, and I, of course, regret it. Schedule leaks. The schedule leak happened, and so we had to move the deadline up. We knew they were going to come out in the morning, and then, the day before the Vikings thing was out there, that might be the case. Very frustrating. I never should have done this. All y'all making me regret it. But at the end of the day, we had two winners that got in by the deadline that we reset after the podcast to 7:30 a.m. before the morning shows put the first week out there officially. So one was on Twitter, who's listed, his name's listed as O'Neill, but he is at Ron the Legendary, who was legendary for sneaking in just under the new wire that we set at 7:30 a.m. at, like, what was it, 7:09?
7:04 a.m.
Feels like someone who woke up to a leak. That's fine. Congratulations to Ron, who nailed Bears Vikings as the first two. And then this one I'm excited about. Ray White deserves this because Ray was one back in when the Bengals played Indianapolis last year. He always sends in a growler bet submission, and I appreciate the people that are the regulars. But it was a game where we had the passer rating down to the first point, and it was 78.3 was what Burrow's passer rating ended up, and Ray had 78.4. So close. Well, it finally comes back around for Ray, who got both of these in well ahead of time and hit a growler winner. So I will be in contact with both of you if you're listening, and we will get everybody that has won a growler is going to get hooked up here now as we hit our dead period before we start next season. So we'll get everything lined up for everyone here very soon. Looking forward to doing that. And congratulations to you guys, even though I hate myself for not realizing I had to make it harder, knowing that how big of a role leaks would have played. Very frustrating.
Still, only two is it could have been worse with the leaks. It feels like if the leaks were that obvious, we would have had way more than just two winners. So I'm not convinced that those guys had inside information.
No, well, there were many that came in after the morning shows let it out that were pretty. So I apologize to you guys. Them's the breaks, kids. So close. That's really our fault. But, you know, look, I'm just kind of making up the rules as I go along in case you couldn't tell. So there we go. That is that's kind of what we got. Again, next week we'll have the veterans reporting. So we're going to be getting a lot of those guys on Tuesday. So I'll have more on that as we get later. So it might not be at exactly the normal time we come out on Tuesday next week, because we're going to wait to talk to some of the vets. They come in and things like that before we do the pod. So keep an eye out for that. Outside of that, anything else, Jay? Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think we covered it.
Okay. I'm going back to my vacation now.
You should. I appreciate you hopping on here. I'm on vacation next week.
This is fun. I don't mind it. I've taken this week off, but I kept this slot here for the podcast because I like talking to you. I like talking Bengals to people, talking about Jamar Chase's seeing buildings.
One thing I know you have planned for your vacation week is to see a Reds game, and I went last night. It was my first time in more than 2 years going to a Reds game, and it felt good. It felt really good to be back in the ballpark and didn't see a winner, but it was just baseball's always more about the ambience and what happens on the field.
I will be there Thursday. And Saturday, actually taking my family on Saturday, and then Thursday going with some friends to the business day special. So excited about both of those.
88 degrees Thursday. Wear your sunscreen.
I'm ready. I hope everyone is not staring a cicada in the face as they listen to this. They're on the way. I know I'm very nervous about that. But outside of that, stay safe, everybody. Have fun, and we will talk to you next week. Have a good one.